You are listening to another Screenfish One-on-One, this time live with director Carrie Kirkpatrick. Carrie is the writer and director of the new animated film Smallfoot, which tells the story of a young Yeti who believes that mythical humans are actually real. In this one-on-one, we get to talk to Kirkpatrick about what excites him about the world of animation and understanding a different point of view. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Hi, Carrie. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks so much for speaking with me. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
Smallfoot looks like a lot of fun. I see that it's based on the book Yeti Tracks, but I was wondering what it is about this story that excited you to be a part of.
Well, a lot of it, you know, is especially in animation, you're always looking for a premise that creates a lot of possibilities for comedy, but also for a unique point of view.
Mm.
So to take, you know, to say something that's Bigfoot in reverse and to make humans the mythical creature that supposedly doesn't exist, that one of our Yetis can meet and then see us through their point of view, provides not only a fun comic twist, but then also just some commentary on us as a culture, as a, you know, when we're the animal, that's a pretty fun sandbox to play in.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, because this point of view seems to be really important to the film, and I think one of the things you've said is that we've all heard stories of these mysterious creatures with strange habits, but what about our strange habits? I was wondering what you meant by that, and how does that connect with the film?
Well, I remember watching a movie, like, even just amongst... I watched a movie one time about some, I believe it was the movie that Reese Witherspoon made, about the African orphans that came over, as grown men.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And found out. And, you know, having to be shown things like a light switch, or a toilet, or potato chips, you know, like... either, and if you eat them, you know, and that was, I mean, that's from one human culture to another, and that's just one culture that lived in a place that didn't have as many modern amenities as someone in the States might have, and even that stuff is always somewhat interesting to look at some of the weird things that we do, you know, that, even just, I mean, we kind of spoof it in the movie. I mean, toilet paper. Toilet paper to an animal is, like, to a Yeti or a dog or someone like that, is just a bizarre concept. you know, or, you know, some of our customs. So all of those things that we look at, everyday things, we take it for granted. Things that when you look at it from the perspective of a Yeti, who's kind of in we always kind of thought of it as a civilization that is about 1,000 years behind in terms of progress. You know, they're still somewhat living in medieval times. What some of our, you know, when they look at a puffy coat that we use for the winter, you know, they think it's some kind of powder skin that you shed.
Right.
You know, so that it's when you, you know, part of it is that you get to have fun with that in terms of what some of our creature comforts are must look like to an animal. I always think about that when I'm with my dog. You know, like, looking at this from her perspective, like, what must she think? You know, Jerry Seinfeld used to do a bit where it's like, dogs must be like, we can just get food whenever we want it. We just open the fridge and it's there, you know? And she's just dependent on me opening a bag and pouring some food in, you know? So it's those kinds of things.
Right. The film has an amazing cast. I mean, my gosh, not just Channing Tatum and Zendaya, James Corden, LeBron James.
was wondering, what was it like working with them? And I also see you wanted them to record together at time as well. So was that hard to do?
Well, it is actually. I mean, honestly, I guess in a perfect world, you would get them all to record together. But it ends up being virtually impossible for a couple of reasons. When we go to these people, we're basically saying to them, you know, we're going to work around your schedule. The truth is that somebody like Channing, he's not. You can't pay all these people what they would normally make in a live action movie,
right?
Because animation is already so expensive just to produce on a minute to minute basis. And to be fair, like when you shoot a live action movie, like when Channing does 21 Jump Street or something like that, he's committing to 40 days on location somewhere. And he's coming in 5-6 days a week, working 10-hour days, you know. So he's not going to work that much in an animated movie. And so, consequently, it's not the same amount of time. It's not the same pay. And to make up for that, we say to them, we're going to work around your schedule. We're going to go wherever you are and make this easy for you. And you're going to work about 4 hours every 8 weeks, roughly. You know?
Yeah.
And we're going to get as much as we can out of you in 4 hours and then go off and animate and then get another 4 hours from you. And so somebody like Channing, who had the most lines in the movie, we'll probably get him over the course of 2 years. Over the course of 2 years for about 10 sessions.
Wow, okay.
And then Zendaya may have had 8 sessions, and Danny DeVito might have had 5 sessions. You know, like, the fewer lines that you have in the movie, the fewer sessions that you need.
Right.
And because of that, in those 4 hours, if we had 2 or 3 actors going, well, that's kind of a lot for me to keep track of. Where if whatever Zendaya is doing, I need more takes from, well, then I might be wasting an hour of Channing waiting while I work with Zendaya.
Right.
So I can't waste that hour. Now, we did get Channing and Zendaya together for a couple of hours so that they could sort of establish some chemistry and see how each of them was playing. And I did, because LeBron has less acting experience than the others, what I did find, and especially for comedy, comedy loves company.
Hmm.
And especially for somebody who is maybe doesn't have as much time in front of a microphone doing this, like, I thought LeBron was really great in Trainwreck and really natural, and he was kind of playing a heightened version of himself. But to throw a pair of headphones in front of LeBron and put him in front of a microphone and say, okay, go, is a little bit of an unfair exercise. You can do that to Danny DeVito, who's been doing this for 55 years.
Right.
And Channing, and people who are used to it. But it wasn't really fair to LeBron, so I brought in Eli Henry, who played Gleam in the movie, and a couple of other really well-versed improv actors to create a really lively room, and it just creates an atmosphere that's a little bit more conducive to play and improv, and makes you a little bit looser. So if the guy across from you is making a fool of himself, then it feels a little bit safer for you to make a fool of yourself. And,
right.
You know, to do all the goofy things that we're asking him to do. It's just a little bit more inhibiting when you're in a room by yourself with headphones on and there's nothing but engineers and producers and people just staring at you, waiting for you to perform.
Of course. As we wrap up here, Kerry, I wondered, with a film like this, what is it that you hope audiences take away from your experience?
Well, look, I think this is a
really fun movie for all ages. I think what I'm most pleased about with the movie is, if you see the trailer, you see that there's a lot of fun. It's funny. It's colorful. It's beautifully animated. The characters are really appealing. But the thing that I find the most rewarding, you know, first of all, is the reaction to the music and the songs, which I'm really proud of, because I co-wrote them with my brother Wayne. It's kind of a dream come true that to work on an animated musical.
Right. Yeah.
And also, I'm just most pleased that people are walking away from the movie that the message is more poignant and pertinent today than they thought it would be. That there was more substance to the movie than they thought there would be going in. And messages about the importance of truth, of being true. That even though the truth might be complicated and somewhat scary, it's still better than lying. It's better than making up lies. It's really a movie kind of about us and them.
Okay.
That how easy it is to vilify them when we don't know much about them, and especially when misinformation has been given to you about them, about the other. And sometimes when you put a faith on the other, that it can alter your perspective of that. And, you know, in a world where it seems to be that we're getting more and more sort of isolated out of fear, you know, this is something just about reaching out and not judging someone else just because of they belong to a particular group. And using, you know, there's a line in the movie that it's like, they think we're monsters and we think they're monsters. And we're not going to fix that by hiding from each other. You know, we have to communicate. So I think those messages are really, really important. And not only sort of in a socio-political way, but this applies to 7th graders versus 8th graders. And you can't sit at this table, you know. The importance of questioning things, that being curious and questioning things is a way to lead to understanding.
Oh, that's...
You know. That ends up being what this is about, kind of reaching out to bridge differences.
It sounds great. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. Smallfoot opens this Friday, is that right?
Yeah, and make sure all your readers or listeners or know that it is definitely for all ages.
That's great. Honestly, Carrie, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for calling.